Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Talent Factor Podcast. It's your boys Damian Parson, Keith Sanchez. Keith, we got a very special guest on the show this evening, man. Super Bowl champion, two Pro Bowls, you know, a tone setter at safety with the Broncos, with the Browns. We got TJ Ward. TJ, what's going on, man?
What's going on, fellas? Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
For sure. We appreciate the time.
Glad to have you, man. You last of a dying breed, man, as far as those safeties that are playing the box and just truing forces and deliver big blows, man. So it's great to speak to you, man. And you are, you know, unsung hero of that Denver Bronco defense. So, man, excited to get to talk some ball with you for sure.
Man, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate the love.
And so you know, one of the main things, right, that, you know, one of the main things we wanted to talk to you about is that transition for you from playing in the NFL to, well, I don't know, I'm not sure if how many listeners know, but you run your own sports agency, Players Above Sports Group. What was the transition like for you?
It was a slow transition. It wasn't immediate because, you know, my last year in Tampa was, I think it was 18, and I was a free agent the next year. No, I had a decent season in Tampa, so I didn't think it would be no problem getting picked up the next year. You know, I knew I wasn't going to get the big contract just because of the way it ended in Tampa. But, you know, my caliber of play since I've been in the league, you know, the player I am, the person I am, the teammate I am, I didn't think for one second that I wouldn't get picked up right away, let alone for two years. Like, so it was a slow transition. I was out the league for a year, didn't get a workout, didn't get a building. Like, it was so abrupt. It was obviously something was going on. You know, it was something above my head. The second year came, I got a tryout. I think I got a workout with Jacksonville. They didn't end up signing me. And then my third year out, I'm getting ready to retire, like turn my papers in. I'm like, I'm done. It's been 2 years. I get a call from the Cardinals. I go down and work out with them. I was on practice squad for about 3 weeks to a month. I think this was around the time they had lost their safeties, Buda Baker and Thompson, I believe. So they were down like three safeties. So I came in. They got healthy, you know, faster than expected. So I didn't get, you know, to play in the game. But it was just great being there. Great, you know, having that one last little time in the team and in the locker room. And then after that, I was comfortable, you know, going to the next step, knowing that if I didn't get called within the next 2 weeks, I was going to retire regardless. So.
Right.
Not- that happened. So I retired and, you know, I watched the season play out and kind of trying to figure out where I was going to go, you know, what I wanted to do. And I know I wanted to stay in the football realm. You know, I wanted to stay in this industry just because, you know, I've been in this industry since I was 8 years old. I know it like the back of my hand. So, you know, you don't study to be an engineer your whole life and then get to 35 and start doing something else. Right. So, you know, I want to help. You know, the guys coming behind me, I thought I didn't, you know, career-wise, I think physically and, you know, what I've done, I kind of maximized my potential. No, I don't think you, you know, ever fully maximize the full potential, but I did very well in the league. And business-wise, career-wise, track-wise, planning-wise, I think the people around me could have did a lot better job helping me, you know, do that and helping me transition from team to team, helping me prepare for signing with a free agent or, you know, the things that come with changing cities, changing teams, what you look for in the next team that you're going to. You know, a lot of those, it's not always about, you know, who offers the most money. You know, that may sometimes come the year after. You know, right. You just want to be in the best situation for you to excel. And that's what I want to do for these players, man. I've been through it. I've had great advice and help, and I've had not so good advice and help. So it's all about maximizing your potential, man. This is a business of getting everything out of yourself you can in this limited amount of time and making sure that, you know, you're in a position to propel yourself for life after football while you're playing, not just when you finish. So that's pretty much why I started it, man. And I have my partners that have been in the business for 10 plus years, and they've been a part of organizations and companies that, you know, weren't solid in, you know, giving their due respect and what they've earned by what they produce. And I think it's important to have a player's perspective in this business, because I don't believe any of these agents have played on the teams. You know, you have few ex-players. They haven't been in locker rooms. They haven't been in training rooms. They haven't been walking around cafeterias, talking to, you know, front office guys on the daily, talking to coaches, position coaches. They can't help you navigate through that. And that's what I want to do. And that's what I'm doing with my players. So this is our first year running up. We got some rookies coming in this class. So I'm very excited. And, you know, we've been working really hard. So I'm very excited and looking forward to the future and what we're going to do.
I think that's pretty cool, man. And you also start to see that change just amongst players having a voice, right? Just as far as them speaking out more now. You know, we had the ESPN 30 for 30 situation where they talked about, you know, just all of these agents, quote unquote, financial managers, and how they took millions and millions of dollars for players and had no penalty whatsoever. It was just getting them to sign on a dotted line. So I wanted to ask you if you had any example for yourself, you know, or something was like, hey, I wish I could have done that better. Or just example where once you had knowledge, you're like, okay, I was able to kind of work that situation better and, you know, kind of maneuver in that situation.
Man, honestly, a lot of these dudes are predators. Like, they know we come from backgrounds where we're not aware of, you know, where we're going. You know, our parents, most of them didn't go to college. You know, my parents both graduated college, but I'm few of the guys in the locker room, if that. A lot of guys are the first people in their family to go to college. So they prey off your ignorance until you get to a certain level when you know what you're doing, and then you kind of see them disappear or dwindle off. Like my first financial advisor, he put me in some crazy policy because he was getting a percentage off of what, you know, I came in with. So
yeah,
I lost like $300,000, $600,000 my rookie contract.
Damn.
And it was held up for years. It's still held up in that policy. And this is 13 years later. Guess where this guy is at? Can't find him. He fell off the face of the earth.
That's,
you know what I'm saying? It's that type of stuff. And I want to be there when these guys sit down with these dudes and be like, no, that's BS. That's BS. You know, or just bring them around people that I know are solid, that I know do a great job in their industry and what they do. Because a lot of times these people sit in your living room and they're talking, you're listening, but are you really comprehending? Do you know how this works? You know, in the future, are you just trying to get them out your living room so you can make a decision? It's a lot of stuff like that, you know? And it's hard. It's hard to navigate that, man. Like my dad, he played in the league, but it's a whole nother game. Like he played in the NFL for three years. But when it was time for me to meet agents and do all this other stuff, like he was so far removed from the business side of it. Not only on the field, but just how the game has transitioned in a business sense. Like, it's completely different. You got guys going from making 100, 200,000 when he played, and they were the top end of the league, to 20 million a year. You know what I'm saying? So it's completely different.
Nah, and like the knowledge that you have is going to help so many players. It's going to come across your path because, like you said, a lot of these financial advisors really aren't looking out for the players. And I remember, I think it was Lamar Jackson when he came into the draft. I think it was him and his mom who went in there and negotiated his contract. And I actually remember talking to an agent a couple of years ago who told me, he was like, man, to be honest with you, like he was like, a lot of times players don't need these financial advisors. They just need somebody, a lawyer that'll read the contract and make sure the team isn't trying to gyp them. Whether it's like, I think it was like Roquan Smith when he entered the league and the Bears had some little, you know, offset language. Like if something happens, you know, off the field, we're going to take away your guaranteed money. And Roquan was like, I'm not showing up to camp until you fix this. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's like you said, that knowledge that you have is going to really help these young players transition, not just into the league, but just to be pros and to be smarter. Because this younger generation that's behind us, they're looking for that knowledge, that information, so that they go in and make the best decision possible.
Yeah, and I that's what I do love about this generation behind us is they like do it yourself. Let me get this information and I'll get it done. You know, I mean, I hear little things about like the next generation don't like to work and this and that, but I mean, they active. I tell you that. They may not be doing the daily works and the the maintenance, but they're highly active. I tell you that.
Oh, it's just a different mindset. That's what we call it.
Different mindset.
But man, just speaking about you know, your agency, I want to talk about a couple of your players. You know, give you a chance to speak on those guys. I've got a chance to watch them, and one guy that stuck out to me was UNLV running back Charles Williams. So can you you know, just give the people a little information about him, a little background, because I thought he was a good football player.
Yeah, Chuck is he's an outstanding back. You know, he went to UNLV, 4-year starter, all-time leading rusher there. Great size. He's about 5'10", 5'11", 205. Great vision. You know, he squeezes through holes you don't even notice there. That's what I first noticed, man. He slides through holes, and he has great speed. He has, you know, separation speed from a back, you know, which, you know, is fantastic, because once he gets to the second level, he can take it to the end zone. You don't have to worry about him really getting caught or hawked down. And he's physical. You know, at the point of attack, he always falls forward. You see him on the goal line runs. He's crossing that line, first down. You need those yards, 2-3. He's going to give you the tough yardage, too. So he's very well-rounded. He catches out the backfield very well. And he's a good kid, man. Great head on his shoulders. Very disciplined, humble. Works extremely hard. Just great all-around kid, man.
Nah, for sure. And I think if there's any class for a under-the-radar guy to really emerge throughout the process, it's this class, right? Because we can't even find who's, quote-unquote, the number one running back, so let alone 2, 3, 4, and 5. And when I watched him, like you said, man, just the fact that he was compact, you know, low center of gravity, he seemed like a guy that, as a defender, those are the running backs you don't want to have to tackle, right? Because it just somehow they manage to slip away from you, or they can, you know, hit you with a move or run through you. So I thought he was a very talented guy that I look forward to making an NFL roster.
Yeah, for sure. He kind of reminds me of Kamara a little bit.
Like, okay.
He slides. Like, you know how Kamara just kind of glides. He don't really shake you. He just kind of slips out of stuff. That's Charles.
For sure. Cool. The player stuck out to me, and he plays the same position that you played. Nick Pickett from Oregon, the 6'1", 210-pound safety. When I watched him, I saw a physical dude who did not mind laying the lumber to ball carriers. He's got a great eye to follow and locate the football. Just kind of tell the listeners and the people a little bit about Nick.
Nick, you know, he came out last year, and I think he was a little slept on because of the COVID, and it was just a lot of confusion when he – left college and was a free agent. He got in camp, but it was just a lot of his agent wasn't, you know, doing the due diligence he was supposed to do. So, you know, we came over. I knew him just from watching him at Oregon. This was like, okay, Nick was actually our first signing. So when I heard he was looking for an agent and he had trouble last year, I'm like, why is this kid not on the roster? Like, why is he not in camp? Because he's too good of a player. He has great size. He knows football. He's smart. Like you said, he's not afraid to come up and put a lick on you. He's 6'1", range is out of this world. I'm like, dude, what is going on? You got to work with me. I got to get you over here. You're an Oregon alum. You know, I'm going to get you right. So he's training right now. He's going to do pro day with Oregon this year. And I think he's going to kill it.
That's what's up. That's what you're looking for, especially in the league today with so much – just space, and you need safeties that have the range, but you also need guys who aren't afraid to come down in the box and be versatile, right? You know, we talk about positionless in the NBA, it's always positionless basketball, right? You want to have as many just athletes on the field, and it's the same thing on defense with the way that offenses are preparing. You got tight ends who, like Travis Kelce and Darren Waller, guys who have premier wide receiver skill sets, that you need defenders that aren't linebackers who can't cover with them. You need the guys like Nick Pickett with that size, 6'1", 210, that can get physical but has the athleticism to run, turn and run with them as well.
Yeah, that kind of brings me back to what you said earlier about the last of a dying breed of safeties. And I believe that breed is going to have to come back sooner than later, because these backs are just way too physical for these little DBs, man. They running through these secondaries like Swiss cheese. you got these little safeties trying to come up, and I get it. The game has opened up a little bit, but still, man, you need that physicality. And I think teams have tried it for the last 3 years. Let's get some little guys back there and, you know, faster, but, you know, they can't last.
Yeah.
They can't last, and they don't want to tackle them. They don't want to tackle Henry. They don't want to tackle Chubb. You know what I'm saying? Not only do they don't want to, it's very, very, very hard for them to do that. Very hard. When you're 195 and this dude coming through the hole at 230, 240 with a 10-yard, you know what I'm saying? That's a business decision for a lot of guys. They, hey, I'm trying to play next week. Let me just let it go to the side. So with Nick, you know, like you're saying, being athletic and 6'1", coming downhill, he's the perfect safety to fill that C-gap because – that C-gap is wide open. It's parting like the Red Sea, and somebody got to fill it.
Yeah, you know, somebody. And
now teams are going back to 12 and 21 and 13s. You're seeing that a lot of those personnel, excuse me, those are, you know, 12 is one back, two tight ends. 13 is one back, three tight ends. 21 is two back, one tight end. So those are like running sets. They're lining up, getting away from that spread because why? You can put nine guys in the box if your safeties are 195. We're going to run down your throat anyway. If your will linebacker is 215, when your strong safety used to be 215 5 years ago, but now your will linebacker 215, your Mike 230. So everybody little in that box. We going straight at you. So I think it's going to transition back to where it was a few years ago. It has to.
It definitely does.
I agree. If you look at two of the top teams from last year, the San Francisco 49ers, the Tennessee Titans, you know, and they decided to zig where everybody was zagging, right? They was like, okay, cool. Like you said, put those little guys in the box and we're going to move them out the way.
No, I mean, not even just them. You think about the Patriots, right? Like they had a rookie with Mac Jones who ran the offense efficiently, but that was a run first offense. They wanted to get downhill, attack your linebackers. Think back to that game against the first matchup against the Bills in that snowstorm. Bills, like, I'm not throwing the ball at all. Like you're going to know I'm running it. Now your small front is going to have to stop me. And they had no answer whatsoever. That physicality. And as you pointed out, TJ, the smaller these front seven guys get, right? Everybody wants the athletic, twitchy ends, but a lot of those guys don't hold up on the edge to set the edge against the run game. So it's like, okay, how do I take you out of the game? You're not going to get 40 chances to get to my quarterback. I'm going to let my tight ends and my linemen lean forward on you, drain your legs out as we run the ball 30 times today. And it's like the NFL, like you said, those hard-hitting safeties, those physical tone setters that's going to smack some of these running backs in the mouth, they have to come back. Because if not, like while everybody's trying to spread it out and pass it, they're going to be teams like the Patriots, like the Titans, like San Francisco is going to say, you know what? Cool. While you got this reduced size front seven, we're going to run the ball 35 times for 200 yards. We're going to control the clock, keep your quarterback on the sideline, and we're going to walk out of here 17-7.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what, you know, the Bengals did. You know, you had Joe. They had Joe, and I forgot the other back's name. That's how they beat the Chiefs. Yep. Toting the ball. You know, they had a couple big plays, but you run the ball, play defense. Pat Mahomes sitting on the sideline. He can't score if you're sitting on the sideline. So I always believe in the front of, you know, I always say this every time, but you run the ball and play defense, you're going to be in the NFC Championship. AFC Championship, going to this in position to be in the Super Bowl, because you know once you get in the playoffs, it gets cold, ugly, and very physical. And that want to, it leaves a lot of guys, man. That one to tackle in that cold, it leaves a lot of guys. I don't want to do this. So, well, man, I think physicality, you know, it wins every time.
That's facts. So, I mean, you've done a lot in your career. And, you know, that 2015, I just want you to kind of take us, you know, through that 2015 championship run with the Broncos. What was it like? Because that was an odd year, you know, offensively. Like, your team was led by you and Von Miller and Marcus Ware in that defense. What was it like going through that whole season? You had Peyton start off kind of rough, and then Brock Osweiler took over when Peyton got hurt. Then Peyton came back, and it was just like, but the one constant, the one thing that didn't change, shout out to C.J. Anderson. That was one of my favorite, probably most underrated backs in football. He was a big part of that offense when Kubiak said, okay, we've done enough of that pistol stuff. Let's get to running the ball, that wide zone. Let's attack these defenses. But what was kind of the mindset for you guys defensively, knowing that you didn't have that prototypical Peyton Manning-led offense?
Oh, man, that season was a roller coaster. That was probably the most up and down season, like thinking you're going to be top and then maybe not make the playoffs to winning the division, having home field. Like, every game was like we won at the end of the game. Like, every game that year was a last-second win, overtime, something. From the first game, I was suspended, so I didn't play the first game. We played Baltimore. We picked the ball off in our end zone. D. Stu picked it off to win the game. Baltimore was going in to score, and we got an interception. Won that game. The next week, we played Minnesota, I believe. And I think I got a game-winning sack. I think Bridgewater was going. They were going in to kick a field goal. I got a strip sack. We recovered. Kansas City. We went to Kansas City. OT. B. Marsh knocks the ball off. They got the ball going down to probably kick a field goal if they make it in field goal range. Roby picks it up, scores. We win. Like, it was like 8 to 10 games like that all year. And it was crazy because at one point we were like, when Peyton had got hurt and I think Brock was coming in, we were, I want to say, not going to make the playoffs or something like that. And then we won a game, and then New England lost, and we ended up with home field advantage. So, you know, once we got in the tournament, we knew it was bad for teams. Like, we got three games. It's going to be hard to beat us with three games because we were just so polished and focused. It was like we take one game at a time, can't nobody beat it, especially on defense because you can't score. So that was our exact mindset. Like, if it comes to the end, Peyton's going to have a game-winning drive, B-Mac going to kick the field goal and win it, or we're going to make a play on defense and win it. And that's what happened, man. Pittsburgh, first playoff game, they were going in to score. We made a play, fumble, recovered it, game over. New England, in an AFC championship game, it was OT. They were going in to score. We intercepted it, game over. So, I mean, it was, man, now that I'm like even going through the games right now, I didn't even realize how like high octane that season was. Like, man, we could have easily have been 4-12, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like, football is crazy, man. That's why it's so beautiful.
Facts. Like, y'all, yeah, your defense, that I remember watching that AFC championship game, and like, I think that was the year New England had a lot of kind of some injuries on the O-line, and it was not the right season for that because that matchup with Ware and Vaughn and I think Malik Jackson on the interior, like the way that your defense flew around, and then that pass rush was teeing off on Brady. And it was just like, we all know, move him off the spot, make him uncomfortable. And, you know, it translates same thing when you got to the, you know, to the Super Bowl against, you know, one of the greatest running dual threat quarterbacks of all time and Cam Newton, who's a whole different problem than, you know, what you were dealing with Tom Brady. But the defense literally, like, and for me, that's how I kind of always look at y'all championship and some of the other ones over the past couple of years when everybody fantasizes and it's just, they love the offense, but defense truly wins championships, man.
Truly, 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 truly. It's not just a saying, it's true for sure.
But Keith, you got anything else for TJ?
Nah, man, I just wanted to tell you, I appreciate you, man. Not only for coming on this podcast, but what you're doing for the players. I've worked in college football, so I've seen the inner workings, right? Just how it goes and, you know, they manipulate situations. So you just being a former player that's essentially giving back, right? You know, even though it's not monetary, it's information, and that's the number one thing. So, man, proud to see a brother like you, you know, be able to kind of switch hats. You know, you go from the helmet, now you got to put the suit on and the tie, and do it in an intelligent way and represent players and, you know, just people like us in a positive manner. So I definitely appreciate it, man.
Nah, no doubt, man. That's the biggest thing, is wanting to give back and help, you know, those, you know, behind me coming up, because I think every generation, you know, they owe the next one, you know, a stepping stool. So I hope, you know, more players follow in my footsteps, or the players that are already out there doing their thing in the agency world or management, man, keep up the good work and let's make these guys better.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And now I know about Charles Williams. So, look, I'm going to be pounding the table for him, dude.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah, man. Continue to be a trailblazer, bro. Like, you know, especially for us and for our community, we need people in these positions like Keith said, to give that information, to teach that and give that knowledge to these young, this young generation that's come behind us. So definitely appreciate you. Keep up the hard work, man.
No doubt, man. You guys too. Great show, man. I appreciate you having me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, guys, that's Damian. I'm Damian Parson, Keith Sanchez with TJ Ward. This is The Talent Factor. We appreciate you guys for joining us. And Keith, what's our slogan?
The talent is always the factor, baby. Talent first.